Gabriel Byrne, also known as Connor Pope. Good afternoon.
How are you, Ray? I'm just going to pretend to be him. I haven't read the book or anything, but I was just going to wing it.
Yeah. How are you, Connor?
I'm great. Yeah. Always on standby for you, Ray. Yeah, always on standby.
Thank you very much. And you're coming in loudly and clearly from somewhere in Dublin City. Okay, so pricewatch.rte. Just before we get to our problem, you're writing today on the cover of the Irish Times about the number of flights that have been booked by Irish people to return home over Christmas.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of them already. And to be honest, I picked two of the busiest routes into Dublin from the UK. And they were Heathrow with Aer Lingus and Stansted with Ryanair. And I just looked at the seats that had already been pre-booked. So these are the seats pre-booked between December the 19th and December the 24th. And around 1,400 seats on those two routes alone have already been pre-booked on those particular dates. Now, bear in mind that you don't actually have to pre-book a seat. You can just book your ticket and then rock up to the airport and they'll assign you a random seat. So that would suggest that there may be more seats booked or more tickets booked, but not seats. And that's just two routes.
So that's a tiny fraction of what would normally be booked.
Well, bear in mind that over the Christmas period last year, Dublin Airport looked after around 1.2 million people coming and going over the Christmas period. But even so, if these two routes have 1,400 people set to travel on them already, and this is 6 weeks before Christmas, and you imagine there's maybe 60 or 70 different routes into all the airports across Ireland, and you just, even a small percentage of those people have a small percentage of those planes have similar bookings, you would be looking at thousands and thousands of people coming in over the Christmas period, or at least they.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, when it's going your way, it's going your way. When it's not going your way, it's not going your way. And today is one of those days. he's only about 6 miles away from us, and his line has gone down. So we'll take a commercial break. Yeah, we'll take a commercial break and we'll get Connor or Gabriel or somebody else back up on the line.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I shouldn't laugh. Connor Pope.
Hi, Ray. I was in full flight, and I don't know where we cut off, but I was just speaking away, and suddenly I was like, Ray Darcy seems awful quiet. Yes. And I was like, hello. And then I realised I'd been cut off. So I don't know where I was.
So you're gone from that Tyline app, and now you're on your phone, but you're coming in loudly and clearly. I'm hexed at there. Yeah. So we were talking about the fact that there were 1,400 booked on Aer Lingus and Ryanair.
And that's two routes over 6 days between December the 19th and December the 24th.
Right.
So if you were to just push that out across the entire network, even in the UK and the European Union, and you say, okay, how many people are likely to come into Ireland over the Christmas period? I mean, you are looking at certainly thousands of people will make bookings at this stage, and that could pose serious problems for the public health under the public health guidelines here, because the public health officials and NPHET are saying it could be an absolute disaster if loads of people come in through the airport. But it's going to be very difficult to stop people because, as we've talked about in the past, Ray, they're guidelines, they're not rules.
Yes.
So the government can't say to people, can't say to an Irish citizen, you can't come home. So, you know, they've done that in a couple of other countries. They've done that in New Zealand, and you know they've done it in some other countries. But it's certainly not on the table. Not on the table here.
No, well, in Australia, if you did return to Australia, you were put into a hotel, which was a nice place, but it was like a prison where you were isolated for 14 days, and you were left on your own, and then you were let out at the end. And that's the way they did it. And as a result, they are now back to some sort of normality down in Australia. I heard somebody say today that they're having weddings with 200 people there. Wouldn't people love to be in that situation here?
Imagine.
Yes. Yeah, so, like, at what stage are people going to get serious about this?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, the reality is that despite 1,400 people might have booked already on those two routes with those two airlines. We don't know if they're going to travel. We don't know what the circumstances are going to be like in 5 or 6 weeks' time. So I guess the whole problem is that nobody knows for sure where we're going to be.
Yes.
And international travel, probably more than many, many other aspects of our lives, depends on certainty going into the future. Because people don't book a flight today to travel tomorrow, or at least not many people do. People book flights weeks and months out, and they make plans weeks and months out. So people are planning for a return home to Ireland this Christmas. There's no doubt about it. And the question then is, how are we going to manage that? Now, we do have the new traffic light system that's in place. We talked about it last week, but it's actually in place now. So if you arrive in Ireland on, let's say, the 19th of December, and you can get a test done on the 24th of December and you're all clear, well, then you can go about your business as you normally would and you don't have to quarantine. But the other thing is, if people do want to come home to Ireland for Christmas, they have to abide by the rules. And the rules say that you must restrict your movements for 14 days upon arrival from a red zone country unless you have the COVID clearance test. So, you know, them's the rules. It's not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be fun for an awful lot of people. But, you know, we really have to try and keep on top of this thing, because if we don't, we're going to go into more lockdowns and the economy is going to suffer and people are going to suffer and then people are going to get sick and die.
Yeah.
It's really grim. And sometimes when we're talking about this, or I'm talking about it with my wife and my friends and my family, you know, I wish it was different. I wish there was like genuine good news on the horizon. Now, we do have talk of the new vaccine from Pfizer, and then today there was
Moderna,
the new vaccine from Moderna, which is 94.5% effective in the trials. Now, all of those things are going to be complete game changers when they happen. But we're still looking at months and months before those things kick in and before we start to feel the positive impact of that. So we just have to grit our teeth, grin and bear it, and, you know, get through it. But having said that, if I was living on my own in a bedsit in London, or if I was working in Manchester and Edinburgh and I was desperately looking forward to come home to see my family, and I hadn't seen them since March or February or last Christmas, I can't say hand on heart that I would decide to stay at home for Christmas. I don't know if many people could. And there's going to be an awful lot of people who will be really, really desperate to come home to Ireland for Christmas. And it's not to go on the lash. It's not to have wild parties. To see their family and friends. And it's really hard to say to somebody in that situation, no, you just can't do it.
Well, nobody is saying it to them. That's the thing. Nobody is. As you say, there are guidelines. There are guidelines. Yeah. And it is just one Christmas.
True. No, you're right. I mean,
no, I don't know. It's very, very difficult. I don't know. It's very, very difficult.
It's extremely difficult. Yeah. It's really hard to, like, you know, but what I would say to people is that we're still a couple of weeks out from the 1st of December. We don't know where we're going to be. We don't know where the UK might be. So just maybe hold tight for a little while and fingers crossed.
And just on the consumer issue. So if people book and then, you know, the traffic light system changes and they can't travel, then what happens there?
Well, no, it's really simple in many ways. If you cut away all the kind of the noise, very simple. If you book a flight and the flight takes off and you decide you can't go, our public health guidelines tell you you shouldn't go, you lose your money.
Okay, right. There it is. Very straightforward.
That's very simple.
Right, this came into pricewatch.rt.ie. Dear Connor, my mother's Vodafone account was set up in my father's name. He passed away in August 2018. Sorry to hear about that. And we contacted Vodafone to get the account changed to my mother's name. Vodafone immediately closed the account and disconnected my mother's mobile a couple of days after my father's funeral. The family spent hours on hold trying to get it turned back on and were repeatedly told Vodafone could only speak with the account holder, my late father. Eventually, the account was turned on and we sent a letter requesting her three children be added as authorised contacts. My mother enjoyed uninterrupted service until last weekend, when my sister-in-law rang to investigate an upgrade. She was told the account was in my father's name, and if he was deceased, the account would need to be closed, and my mother's phone would once again be disconnected. Vodafone promptly disconnected it. I've spent the last 4 days trying to get it re-enabled. I've been hung up on multiple times. I've been promised phone calls, which never happened. I've been lied to and transferred to the wrong department. I had a customer service agent hang up on me because my mother was taking too long to get to the phone to confirm her identity. She's 80 and lives on her own. She relies heavily on her mobile phone. Please help.
Wouldn't that just break your heart, right? That's, on every level.
Yeah.
It's just not right. Like, you have to just ask straight off, where's the humanity in that? Like, first off, let's go back to August 2018, when the man whose account was, the name of the account holder died. Mm. So his grieving widow and his grieving children then find out that Vodafone will refuse to talk to anybody except the deceased person. which is absolutely absurd, because these things happen. People die and they need to get their accounts in order. So, and then they disconnected her, and then there was an element of it that I extracted, but they actually took away her mobile number and said, oh, sorry, your mobile number's lost now, because it's gone back into the pool of mobile numbers. This is a woman who was at 78 years of age at that point. And then they eventually managed to retrieve her number and they managed to get her reconnected. Last week, her sister-in-law rings and they say, oh no, well, if the account holder's dead, we're going to cut you off. At no point did someone in Vodafone think to themselves, hang on a second, is this the right thing to do? Should I maybe escalate this to one of my superiors? Yeah. Or should I just look at the computer screen and say, well, the computer screen says I must do X if Y happens, so I'm going to do X. Like, you need to empower your staff to have a little bit of common sense, a little bit of flexibility and a little bit of humanity when they're dealing with people in situations like this. End of story. And this doesn't just apply to Vodafone or Air.
Can I ask a question? Are call centres under more pressure now because of the pandemic for some reason?
Well, I mean, if you talk to the mobile phone operators, they say a lot of their staff have been working remotely.
Okay.
And that would put them under pressure. But this is not a new issue with the mobile phone operators. You know, this story is certainly a new one, but there have been long problems with the operators and how they handle customer complaints. And this is exactly it. And it is all about empowerment. It is all about making the frontline staff, who I have huge sympathy for, because let's face it, they're probably not paid huge money anyway, but it's all about giving them the power to look at a particular situation and say, what I'm about to do isn't right.
Yes.
What should I do instead?
Yeah.
Now, in this situation, what they would have done is they would have said, oh, hang on a second, let's go back to our records and we'll see that, yes, in fact, we did deal with this in 2018, and this woman was then put onto the account. Her children were named as intermediaries who could act on her behalf, and then they wouldn't have disconnected her. But actually what happened is they disconnected this woman's mobile phone. As a result, an 80-year-old woman was cut adrift from the world in a world in which people are self-isolating and restricting their movements and told they can't visit.
And she needs her phone more than ever before.
And she needs the phone more than anything, because it's her only contact.
Okay, so
with the outside world. So anyway, I contacted Vodafone last Thursday it was. And to be fair to them, they got back to me very quickly, I think within less than 24 hours. And they said that they'd been on to this particular family. They'd apologised. They were working to reconnect her phone as a matter of urgency. And they'd given them a financial compensation as a gesture of goodwill, or a credit note or whatever as a gesture of goodwill. And they apologised profusely, and they said that they were recruiting more staff to try and avoid this kind of thing happening in the future. So the issue is resolved, and I'm pleased about that. And hopefully by the time,
But here's the thing, Conor, because we have been talked about lack of empowerment and lack of flexibility when it comes to people who answer the phones for mobile phone companies and other companies for, I don't know, 10 years now. The people involved in these companies are listening, and we're not the only people complaining about it. They must get complaints via email and letters, etc. And yet things don't seem to have changed at all.
Well, that's a really good point. And I thought it was interesting last week that it reached the chambers of power, the corridors of power. And Eamon Ryan, addressing the Dáil last Wednesday, he was talking about another mobile phone operator, and he said that their customer care was terrible and something needed to be done. And then the Kian Kiorla said, the customer care for this other provider, and like it's no secret it was Air, was appalling. And he wondered whether Comreg was doing its job. Now, Comreg is the communications watchdog, and it really does have a role to play here, because it shouldn't fall to you and me and the Irish Times and Joe Duffy to act as advocates on behalf of consumers when there is a taxpayer-funded organisation,
Comreg,
that is supposed to do this stuff. Now, Comreg, to its credit, resolves lots of problems. It resolves thousands of problems every single year. But I think it needs more teeth. And I don't think it, I think it needs more, it needs a bigger stick with which it can beat the telecoms operators. Because as you say, this has been going on for years and years and years and years and years. And all the companies will take the hit, and they'll be cringing when they listen to us talking about it on air, saying Vodafone has done this or Air has done that. But, you know, there'll be another problem along tomorrow or the next day. And all it takes, I believe, is that you properly train your staff and you empower them to, and I'm going to borrow a line from Frozen 2, to do the next right thing, to just do the right thing in circumstances like this. Because this is really black and white.
Yeah.
Right?
But as you say, if Comreg had the proper sanctions, well, then they might take heed of what's been said and change their behaviour if there were real sanctions involved.
Absolutely. And funnily, if Comreg is it's going to have a meeting with the government and the relevant authorities within government in the days ahead to see if there is new legislation required to maybe give it more teeth and to maybe give it more power to tackle these kinds of issues, because it shouldn't be like this. It's just so simple to resolve this kind of problem. And I think there's a deep irony in the fact that we're talking about communications companies here, and they seem to constantly display a complete inability to communicate on any level with their customers.
Okay, radio. They're telling me, are we going to Gabriel Byrne now? No, we're going to do them after 4 o'clock.
We do them
after 4 o'clock. Okay, I just had to clarify that, Connor. Okay, so it's been sorted out for that poor woman,
and we
hope that things are going to change in the future. But we've said that before.
That's what we need. Yeah, we need more systemic change. Now, if you'd like me to sing a few songs,
no, you're okay. Thanks very much, Connor. Pricewatch at RTE.ie. Thanks. That's Connor Pope there.
Bye-bye.
And of course, you can read Connor in the Irish Times.